Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner. Get out, Bob. Get out. Get out of here. Get out.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome to the show on Tuesday, June 11th. What's going on, everybody? Adam Azer here with Chris Towers, who just got back from vacation. Welcome back, Chris. Oh, I should have had the welcome back. Why don't I ever have the welcome back music queued up? Hi, Chris.
Hey, Adam. Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm back. You want me to stall so you can get the music ready, or are we going to
I'm having internet issues.
Okay, no internet issues. No, it was great. I was on vacation. I went to Atlanta for a long weekend.
Hey, wait, hold on.
Atlanta, top three city.
You're not even listening.
And now.
You're not even listening to the music. Welcome back.
There it is.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Did you go to the Coca-Cola factory?
I did not. I went once when I was a kid, and I haven't been since.
Jeez, somebody doesn't know how to do Atlanta.
I'm not 100% sure what the... Like, is it a working factory?
I don't know. I went when I was a kid, too. I haven't been back in, 25 years. Anyway, there was not a lot going on Monday. An unbelievably brief news and notes section today. We had 8 games. The Yankees and Mets got rained out, so we were down to 8 games. Yeah, we'll talk about what went on, but also, we haven't done this all year, I don't think. Fun with Fangraphs. Chris is here, so we're going to take a look at Fangraphs, some of the leaders in some important categories, hard contact rate, BABIP, things like that, home run to fly ball rate for pitchers, and we'll see what we can make of it, and maybe we can find some trade candidates in that. Any standouts for you in Monday's games that you're just dying to talk about, Chris?
Yeah, I think we should probably do another Yu Darvish conversation. It wasn't even a terrible start, but it was just another one where he wasn't great. Like, I mean, I know it was Coors Field.
But... Come on, Chris. This was
okay,
a good start.
Okay, but is Yu Darvish someone we're giving the benefit of the doubt to because he pitched in Coors Field?
No, really the only thing... I actually looked at it as an encouraging start because he didn't walk anybody, but 5 starts ago, Darvish didn't walk anybody, and then in his next 4, he walked 11 in about 24 innings. So you're going to have to see it again.
That start that you're referring to, he had 11 strikeouts. He only had 3 yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't take much away because I sat Yu Darvish. I own him in 2 leagues now, and I sat him, and I didn't expect much from Coors, but 6 innings, 4 runs at Coors is actually not that bad. No walks is good. You know what? I'll say this. My opinion didn't change of Yu Darvish. I'm still stashing him. We'll start in the appropriate matchups, and I'm hopeful. Did your opinion change?
No, but I'm a lot less hopeful than you are. And
I'm not as hopeful as you might think.
For me, it's mostly that I'm looking for reasons to be hopeful, and that did not provide any for me.
Yeah, but do you have the guts?
I think it's the way.
Do you have the guts to drop Yu Darvish?
Probably not, but maybe I wish I did.
Our first segment of the day, other than Monday's standouts, is called "Rank These Starting Pitchers." Do you know how this segment works, Chris? I'll guide you through.
I think I might be able to figure it out.
All right. Then let me know if you have any questions. All right. Rank these starting pitchers. Darvish is one of them. His opponent last night, Herman Marquez, who also went 6 innings and gave up 4 runs, 3 homers against the Cubs. Mike Minor, very good start at Boston, 8 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. And Griffin Canning, who in his last 5 starts, is the number 22 starting pitcher in points, number 20 in Roto. In those starts, he has a 2.70 ERA, 4 walks, 28 strikeouts in 30 innings with a 15% swinging strike rate, which is just bonkers. I didn't include his first 3 starts. I was trying to be a little generous for Griffin Canning, but rank those pitchers. You see him on the list there as Minor, Darvish, Marquez, and Canning.
I'll go Marquez, Minor. I feel more comfortable in starting Griffin Canning than Yu Darvish at this point, so yeah, I'll go with him.
And you're still going with Marquez over Minor.
Yeah, and I wouldn't feel, if you asked me to explain that, I wouldn't feel super comfortable in whatever explanation I came by. I just don't quite trust what Mike Minor's doing as sustainable, because it's just such an outlier for what he's done, you know, in his recent history as a starter.
The good news, when there are only 8 games, it gives me more time to kind of dig into players. I think Chris, Scott, and Heath always do that, but, you know, I'm putting together the show. It takes time. So, but when they're only games, I got a chance to kind of look more into the numbers for Mike Minor. Now, first thing, okay, so Mike Minor has a 2.52 ERA and a 1.18 whip and more than just over a strikeout per inning. And we're going to try to find out where he ranks among starting pitchers. He is ahead of Ramon Marquez, who is...
he's got to be pretty high up, yeah, given the volume you're working with.
Marquez is 15th in points and 26th in Roto. Miner's actually 16th in points, 1 point behind Ramon Marquez, but ahead of him in Roto. So let's say he's around 20th in Roto. Mike Minor has an 87.1% strand rate. So right off the bat, Chris, what does that tell you?
Either he is better than basically anyone in baseball at pitching with runners on base, or more likely, he's been incredibly lucky.
Right. It's a very high number. The good, though, 43.8% ground ball rate, that's a career high. 12% swinging strike rate, that's a career high. And if you look at those two numbers, ground balls and swinging strikes, very, very similar to his 2017 season. 2017, he had a 2.55 ERA, which is almost exactly what he has right now, and more than a strikeout per inning. However, it was all as a reliever. So there are a lot of things at play here with Minor. Sure, he's been lucky with an 87% strand rate. But those two numbers, ground balls and strikeouts, are showing the same pitcher that we saw 2 seasons ago when he was great as a reliever. And by the way, after the All-Star break last year, he did have a 2.97 ERA and 53 strikeouts and 57 2/3. I don't know if he made any adjustments after the All-Star break, but it's now like a year almost of a sub-3 guy. I'm buying into Minor more than you are.
Yeah, I think. And like I said, I don't have a great explanation for it. It's mostly just that, you know, it's 90 innings, and sometimes things happen in 90 innings. But because I don't necessarily see like a huge adjustment that he's made. Yes, he is getting more swinging strikes, but he still has a, you know, an XFIP in the 3.9 range, a Sierra. Wow. I think that's at 4.00.
Really?
And so, yeah, it's weird. I'm not 100% sure what the explanation for it is there. So for me, it seems like a couple of good months. I guess the fact that it's going back to the second half of last season, I didn't realize that, does change my perspective a little bit, but I still do view him as a sell high candidate.
And I think I view Ramon Marquez as a buy low candidate. Look, you have to accept he's not going to strike guys out like he did last year, but he still has a good strikeout rate. He's still 1 per inning. And like I said, he's 16th in points. He's 25th in Roto. He very rarely has a bad start. Like last time out at the Cubs, he gave up 8 runs in 5 1/3. But he very rarely has a bad, bad start. And I think people are really down on him. In fact, we're going to read an email later about Marquez. We can talk more about him. But the fact that you rank him over Minor, I think probably tells me that you consider Marquez a buy low as well, depending on how people view him.
Sure, and it really does depend, like you said, if someone in your league is just fed up with Mike Minor. And this is...
Marquez.
This gets to something that I... Yeah, Marquez. This gets to something that I think is worth mentioning. The email that you mentioned coming up, we get a lot of like kind of rage drop, like I'm done with this guy, I dropped him. And at some point, and I think, you know, June 11th is we're at that point now. You got to stop judging players based on what you drafted them as and then judging them as disappointments if they're not that. You should judge a player for what he is. And in Ramon Marquez's case, it's still a valuable pitcher. I would guess it's probably an ERA lower than 4.19. The whip is still good. It's still a good amount of strikeouts. And so, you know, he's someone that I get being frustrated with him. because you might have drafted him as a potential ace, and he's not that, and he's probably not going to be that. But you got to take him for what he is at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. And like, if you want to sit him at home, I guess sit him at home.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. I mean, the Cubs at Coors Field, that's really tough, and he did all right. All right, we got a lot more to get to here. Actually, let me, like, do you buy Griffin Canning? I love the swinging strike rate. And like I said, last five starts, he's a top 22 starting pitcher with a 270 ERA in that stretch. What I don't love is, like, the basically innings cap, like pretty much getting six innings from him, which means you're probably getting five or six strikeouts, which really isn't doing a whole lot. The way where I'm at with Griffin Canning is, like, I don't mind having him. I don't mind starting him right now. I don't know how much longer this is going to last. I wish I felt like I could sell high on Griffin Canning, but I'm not sure who's buying.
Yeah, I think it's worth trying. The one thing that is worth considering is nobody really pitches deep into games anymore. Like Mike Minor does, I guess. But for the most part, we're going to have to recalibrate to a place where, you know, if a guy's good and he gives you five innings every time, you're never going to get an ace out of that guy. But that represents the best case scenario for a lot of pitchers at this point. So I knock him a little bit because of the limited workload and, you know, the fact that he has been somewhat efficient and they just don't seem to trust him to go deep into games. But in his case, the stuff is good. The swing strikes seem legitimate because of that stuff. And so, yeah, I think if someone wants to give you Ramon Marquez for him, go for it. But I think he's still someone who should be useful moving forward.
Chris, you play poker?
Yeah. Yeah, I like a poker game.
You don't play. Like, when was the last time you played poker?
Like 3 weeks ago, but before really? That, it was like a year ago.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still pretty
I've
good.
Been trying to get a game together with the office people, though. So
yeah, I would love to get a poker game going. If I was in the same office as you, I would play poker with you.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Well, the World Series of Poker is back. It's that time of year again. It is the 50th year of the most popular poker tournament in the world. You can have a front row seat to the bracelet events with CBS All Access. Starting now until July 16th, you can live stream the final tables of 33 of the WSOP bracelet events, including 25 events that you cannot watch anywhere else. That's exclusive stuff on CBS All Access, including the 100K High Roller and 100K Six Max. There's going to be a showdown of some of the biggest names in the game. The stakes are high, the tension is palpable, and the winnings are huge. You can watch all the events online or through the CBS app. Seriously, this is actually really cool stuff. Visit cbs.com/poker, cbs.com/poker, or download the CBS app on your phone or your streaming device, and you can get a free trial, so start watching today and don't miss any of the action. All right, get some poker action there. And today's sponsor is Robinhood. You'll hear more about them later. Strike.robinhood.com for our offer. Strike.robinhood.com. News and notes. Giancarlo Stanton's going to start a rehab assignment today. Aaron Judge is going to start one soon. Stanton should be back well ahead of Judge, unless he gets hurt on the rehab assignment again. Yoan Moncada left with a back issue. He's day-to-day. Adam Wainwright is on the IL. Not looking good right now for Alex Reyes. His last two starts have been bad. Michael Wacha rejoined the rotation yesterday. So I'm hopeful for Reyes, but he's got to turn it around in AAA. Jordan Lyles is on the IL with a hamstring injury, which may have been affecting his delivery on Sunday when he had a terrible start. Did you see? You were in Atlanta. Were you at the Pirates game last night by any chance?
I was home in South Florida by then.
Well, did you see the stupid ejection? Yes. What an outrageous ejection! Outrageous.
I guess part of it has to be that the Pirates have a, at this point, I think, pretty well-earned reputation for throwing at people and just kind of being, like, angry on the mound. And so maybe that organization has kind of lost the benefit of the doubt. I can't remember who it was. A former player tweeted yesterday after this that it's like an organizational thing, like even coming up through the minors. I think he said he's with the Phillies, and it was something like, even when we were in the minors, we hated Pirates pitchers. So, you know, maybe it's that.
Maybe. I mean, that was the one guy I wanted to watch. I wanted to watch Musgrove last night.
Well,
because I don't really buy Joe Musgrove, but you know, he made some changes to his delivery, got back on track. I wanted to see what was what. He hits Josh Donaldson in the first inning, and it didn't really look intentional.
Yeah.
They start jawing at each other. Donaldson shoves the catcher, Diaz. I don't really know what Musgrove did. He must have said something really mean.
I think the umpire after the game said it was because he threw his glove down, and that was viewed as like an escalation thing before Donaldson pushed the catcher.
Come on. And they both got – you cannot toss a starting pitcher in the first inning.
Yeah.
Like that is –
Jameson Taillon's going to get a suspend or a fine for his tweet. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see his tweet. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Joe Musgrove got ejected. David Bote, homer to Colorado. Good job, Heath Cummings. Nice call on a sleeper hitter. Kevin Gausman was terrible again, which of course is very relevant because Dallas Keuchel had a very strong start in the minors. And even Sean Newcomb came in. If they want to replace two guys in the rotation, Newcomb had a great outing yesterday in relief. Seems like a long shot, but just saying. First baseman Matt Adams for the Nationals has an oblique issue, could miss a couple of games. Howie Kendrick DH'd. No, did he? Yeah, they were at the White Sox last night. Yeah, I think he DH'd, but this could just make more opportunity for Howie Kendrick if Adams has a serious injury, and Kendrick's just been awesome. Arizona and Philadelphia combined for an MLB record 13 home runs. We'll talk about that game soon. And the Dodgers and Angels drew the biggest crowd in 21 years at Angels Stadium. It was a really exciting game with the Angels beating the Dodgers. All right, when we come back...
That's wild.
Yeah, what? The home runs?
That's wild. That's a bigger crowd than they had like during their World Series season.
Might have been regular.
Like, they didn't have one in 99.
Like regular
That's
season
wild.
Must be yeah,
or 2001 was when they won the World Series.
Yeah,
right. Let's move on.
Yeah, no, 99 was the Yankees. Double dongs when we come back. Kingery, Escobar, Albies, Marte, a lot of your emails today at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and Fun with Fangraphs. We'll be right back after this on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Double dongs. A lot of dongs last night. Like I said, record-setting night in Philadelphia. And Scott Kingery was part of that. He hit two home runs. And Eduardo Escobar hit two home runs. And Ketel Marte homered as well. We'll talk about him. Let's start with Kingery. He's 47% owned. Is he criminally under-owned right now, batting .324, slugging .610?
No, I don't think a reasonable prosecutor would be able to bring this case to jury. But I do think he's under-owned. And one thing that I really like seeing is last season he had a lot of trouble making contact. He's been hitting the ball really hard this year, but there were still some contact issues with him. But then you look at the last 10 games, he has 8 strikeouts. He's starting to hit a little better. That's a good sign because this is someone who I do think still, you know, over the course of a full season could still be a 25 homer, 20 steal guy. And I would imagine he's going to play pretty much every day moving forward unless they, and he has been basically since he came off the IL. But unless they go trade for a center fielder, and even then, I think he's probably a better player than Michael Franco at this point. So I would hope we see Scott Kingery in the lineup every day, and I do think he should be more owned than 47%, especially. I think he should be owned in all categories, Lee.
Would you have the guts? Do you have him to rank Kingery ahead of Ozzie Albies, who also double-donged yesterday.
No, no, I wouldn't do that. Albies is definitely a safer play, and the upside, I'm not sure, is that much higher. You know, I would guess Albies won't hit for as much power as Kingery, but he's, you know, in a better spot in the lineup. He should be, I would set the baseline higher than Kingery for sure.
Albies is annoying, though. I mean, he is the number 9 second baseman in points leagues, number 14 in Roto, but so streaky. Maybe this gets him going, a nice 2-homer game. Plate discipline's good again, but there's just not that much there. There's 9 home runs and 4 steals so far in 66 games for Ozzie Albies, and a .269 batting average, and now he's batting at the bottom of the order.
He's a huge volume guy. Yeah, that's one of the biggest things he has going in his favor, is I think he lead baseball in plate appearances last year.
Not
going to
happen.
Definitely close.
He got moved down in the order. I mean, he's going to have to hit his way back up to the top because, he's batting like 7th now. But he could, obviously those things change. All right, other double dongs from yesterday. Eduardo Escobar. Eduardo Escobar is the number 2 shortstop in fantasy, number 3 third baseman in points leagues, number 2 third baseman in Roto. He is batting .299 with 17 home runs. Last year he had .272 with 23 home runs and 48 doubles in 151 games. Do you buy this from Eduardo Escobar?
No. No, I mean, you look at the expected stats, and he looks a lot like the guy he was last season. It's actually kind of shocking how similar he looks. Last year, he had a .250 expected batting average and a .429 expected slugging percentage. This year, he's got a .233 expected batting average and a .425 expected slugging percentage. So, not hitting the ball particularly hard. Doesn't have a particularly good barrel rate. He looks very similar to the guy he's been the last couple of years. So I think you're looking at a pretty viable sell high candidate here, one that you probably won't regret making a move on.
Well, I will say Eduardo Escobar was a top 12 shortstop. He was basically 12th, and he was 13th at third base.
Sure, but he wasn't near this good.
No, he was not. It looks like he's converted all of his doubles into home runs.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, that's good, but if your net number of extra base hits hasn't really gone up, that's probably
a sign. I mean, I oversimplified it, but last year he had 48 doubles, and
it's not to say he's bad, but he's the number 2 shortstop, and shortstop might be the most stacked position in fantasy right now. So, I think you probably view him more in the 14-15 range, and if someone can give you something as a top 7 or 8 shortstop, I think, yeah, you try to move him.
Arizona second baseman Edelmo Vargas also homered twice, but he's 2% owned. He doesn't play every day. I think we could skip him. But Starling Marte has been pretty hot lately, and he went 3-for-5 with 2 homers and 4 RBIs at Atlanta. So he has a 2.8% walk rate, and it's usually like 6%, which is really low. But 2.8% is like hilarious. That's why Chris laughed. I don't even know. What do you make of Marte? Right now he's batting .289 with 9 home runs and 11 steals in 54 games. I guess he's mostly been Starling Marte, but on pace for a career high in home runs now after this game last night. Your take?
Yeah. You know, he's mostly been Starling Marte, but, probably 3 weeks ago he hadn't been. So I just kind of look at it. He's mostly been what you expected, and so the walk rate's too low. I would expect that starts to regress a little bit. Maybe the power comes back down. But yeah, he's a much better option in a Roto league for sure. Probably not necessarily a must-start guy in a points league, but for sure a must-start player in a Roto league.
All right, those are your double dongs from last night. Let's see, Would you rather have Starling Marte or Whit Merrifield, who we have a fun email about later?
Merrifield.
Do you know the last time Whit Merrifield stole a base, Chris Towers?
1973.
74, actually.
Ah. I always forget.
He has May 22nd was the last time he attempted a steal. I think May 7th might have been the last time he stole a base. Maybe it was May
27th. So the thing I would want to see in that, because I don't know, I haven't been, maybe there's something going on with the Royals and they're not running as much as we expected, but I would imagine.
Oh, Mondesi is.
Yeah, so that's why I would expect that's not the case. So maybe he just hasn't had a lot of opportunities, but no, I mean, he's 21 times on base in that span, only 3 extra base hits, so he's at 18 times standing on first base. So that's weird. I wouldn't expect it to continue, but you know, one thing that we did talk about with last season was how concentrated his stolen bases were in the second half, and that came when the Royals were totally out of it and just kind of let everyone run. And this season,
they're out of it.
You know, he's attempted 13. Yeah, I mean, they were out of it on the third day of the season, yeah. But you know, he 8 stolen bases, 5 caught stealing. Maybe he slowed down a bit. I'm not 100% sure there, but yeah, they haven't let him run as much this season. I think I would still take him over Marte, but maybe it's a categories versus points thing where you take Merrifield in points, Marte in categories.
Yeah, I mean, Merrifield after the All-Star break stole 28 bases in 67 games. Before the All-Star break, 17 steals in 91 games. So, yeah, steals are streaky. I mean,
yeah,
home runs are streaky, so are steals. And I imagine he'll start running more. He has been cold. Quite cold, cold as ice. Didn't have that queued up, sorry. But last 14 games, batting .283, but slugging .333. 2 extra base hits, a double and a triple. All right, we got more on Whit Merrifield later in our email section here. Let's get through the rest of yesterday's action. The fringy starting pitchers. Anibal Sanchez, another great start. Only 1 strikeout. That was weird. But this is now 3 starts. It was 6 innings, 1 run, 1 strikeout at the White Sox. He got the win. In his last 3 starts, Anibal Sanchez has given up 2 earned runs, with 3 walks and 15 Ks and 17 and a third. By the way, you got to be watching our video here. Go to YouTube, type in CBS Sports, and find our video every day, because we got like video of Anibal Sanchez striking people out right now, or striking person out, I guess I should say, 1K yesterday. But the fringy starting pitchers from yesterday are Sanchez, Jared Eichhoff, Michael Wacha, and Sandy Alcantara. Sanchez, good. Eichhoff, dreadful. Wacha, good. Alcantara, meh. Yeah. Do you want any of these guys on your mixed league roster?
Sanchez against the right matchups. He was good last year. I don't think he's totally lost it, but I don't think he's great either. These are all the definition of streaming guys. I think Alcantara might be the most interesting guy, but you know, this is what he does. He goes through... He had a great start his most recent time out. He'd been pretty good before that. And then he goes out and has a start where he can't find the strike zone. Still does a good job of limiting hard contact. The hitters really have a hard time squaring up on him, so he should be someone who outperforms his peripherals, but he's always going to have a really bad whip. So he's more of just an upside stash play than anything else. I don't necessarily love any of these guys, and Eichhoff, I believe, has allowed 16 home runs in his last 27 innings, which is a lot. 16 home runs in 27 and a third innings.
He gave up 5 yesterday.
1137 OPS with a 237 BABIP in that span. Almost as many home runs as strikeouts. I've been trying to find, I don't know if this doesn't seem to be available, but I wanted to get the pitching performance by hitters this season and see how it compares to the last 27 innings for Jared Eichhoff. But yeah, I think at this point you can let go of Jared Eichhoff. I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be in the rotation.
I think Chris needs to give a little more credit to Anibal Sanchez. Sanchez had a .283 ERA, a .108
whip, good last year,
and a strikeout per inning in 136 and 2/3 last year. He was really good. And
I don't think I didn't give him credit. I said he's good.
Give him credit. Yeah, but he's the definition of a streamer. Really?
Yeah, he hasn't been that good this year. He's got a 4.42 FIP.
He has a 3.92 ERA. People don't play in leagues with FIP, so you should tell them what his ERA is.
Okay, Adam. Yeah, no, the biggest thing is the control hasn't been there this season. He's actually, the strikeouts are still okay. The strand rate is fine, but he just hasn't been able to get the ball over the plate consistently enough. And he's also had a huge spike in his fly ball rate. So, you know, you look at it, he's moved in the wrong direction in all three BIP or ERA predictive stats, but you know, two of them in particular have really gone the wrong way. And so
things are looking
up. Maybe he's, what's that?
Things are looking up, man. Three good starts in a row.
Yeah.
Getting back. All right, we don't have to talk about Anibal Sanchez anymore. We probably don't have to talk about Oakland starting pitcher Tanner Anderson or White Sox starting pitcher Odrysa Mertesbaña. They both made their first starts of the season, do we?
Anderson has a cool delivery.
Does he?
He kicks his leg way out. That was fun.
Oh, great.
That's about all I have
to say. We don't
have
video of that. I mean, come on. What's going on? What kind of operation is this? I want high leg kick. Get the video. Just kidding, video crew. All right, then let's talk about two studs. One kind of disappointing, one kind of amazing. Mookie Betts has been kind of disappointing. Would you agree?
Unquestionably so.
Good. Because I bet
he was arguably the top player in fantasy coming into the season.
Only for Heath. I bet if Scott were here.
And arguably.
Scott would be like, oh, he hasn't been that bad. He's this, he's that. I never sit Mookie Betts. So thank goodness somebody's willing to admit that Mookie Betts has been kind of disappointing.
Well, yeah, all of those things are true. He hasn't been that bad. Relative to the league as a whole, he's been awesome. I would never sit Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he hasn't been disappointing. It doesn't mean that he won't be good moving forward, but it does mean he's been disappointing. We drafted him, and this is, you know, we see when things are going really well for Mookie Betts, he's arguably the best player in baseball and arguably the best player in fantasy. When things aren't going as well for Mookie Betts, he's still a really, really good player. And so, there, no, you should not panic about Mookie Betts. No, you should not sell him. But, you know, it's been a disappointing start to the season.
What's interesting about Betts, he is the number four outfielder in points leagues and number 17 in Roto. And this is usually when Scott and I get into disagreements, because Scott typically defaults to the points leagues rankings. Why is it so much different for Betts? Because his plate discipline is better than ever. 48 walks, 44 strikeouts. That always is going to boost the guy's value in points leagues compared to a standard batting average Roto league. He's number 17 at outfield. That's actually like major bust. Because 268, not good. 10 home runs, nothing special these days. Six steals, not really getting much.
Fine.
Yeah. And 51 runs is really good, but 29 RBIs is not. So
he is back in the leadoff spot. So
he is.
You know, that's something that moving forward we could see an increase in his counting stats.
We'll
see.
I don't know. I mean, he's batting second before, so I don't know.
Yeah, it'll give him 20 extra plate appearances over the course of the season. It's a big deal.
It's not a small deal. I just, like, is this going to be 2017 all over again, which was fine? Or, like, if you were drafting Mookie Betts right now, let me pull up to 2017, he batted 264 with 24 home runs and 26 steals. Right now he's batting 268 with 10 home runs and 6 steals. You know, if you were going to draft Mookie Betts, where would you draft him?
Fourth.
Behind?
Trout, Yelich, and Bellinger.
Okay. All right. Cool. Nolan Arenado or Betts?
Betts.
Okay. And then kind of amazing, Freddie Freeman homered again. Can he keep it up? The only question is the home runs. You know Freddie Freeman's going to hit for batting average. You know he's going to be great. But he's the number six hitter in points, number three in Roto, with 18 home runs. He's on pace for 45 home runs, and that's with barely more fly balls than line drives. A 26.5% home run to fly ball rate, but he's hitting the crap out of the ball. So, you know, is this legit? Remember a couple weeks ago I said, trade Freddie Freeman for J.D. Martinez. I don't think I do that anymore. But am I being
still do.
You know, the back spasms, I'm always such a nervous Nelly with injuries. So the fact that J.D. Martinez had some back issues maybe scared me a little bit too much. But if Freeman's a home run hitter, then he's like one of the best hitters in baseball.
he's one of the best hitters in baseball, regardless.
One of the best hitters in even fantasy.
Like after this hot streak, we're seeing him hit for more power than he usually does, and he's on pace for like a very similar season to what JD Martinez did last year.
Yeah,
which was not JD Martinez's best season. So I still think you'd take JD Martinez over him, but that's not obviously a knock against Freddie Freeman. It's just he's probably not going to keep having a 27% home run to fly ball ratio. He's an incredible hitter. There's no real case against him. I would take the under on 40 home runs for Freddie Freeman, which still means I think he's going to hit, you know, 18 to 19 more moving forward. But yeah, I think he's probably a bit ahead of what you should expect as far as home run.
He only has 43 RBIs despite hitting 311 with 18 home runs in 65 games. It's really not that low, but you look at other guys who have hit the same amount of home runs, it's a little low. Freddie Freeman is batting 261 and slugging 283 with runners in scoring position. So that's weird. Maybe the RBI rate gets a little better, although it's really not that bad of an RBI rate. In the bullpen, Joe Webb got a save for Atlanta, but Luke Jackson had pitched two straight games. Sean Kelly and Matt Barnes both blew saves in a pretty wild game in Fenway last night. Who's the closer in 2 weeks? Who are the closers for the Rangers and Red Sox?
Jose Leclerc, who the manager keeps talking about as getting close to taking the job back. I know he... Did he blow a save or did he just take the loss over the weekend?
Two bad outings over the weekend, but I still would take Jose Leclerc.
And one of them was, I think there was, it was kind of a fluky thing. Like he had two outs and then he had just like a really crappy ball fall in for a hit and then gave up a home run. So I think he's the best reliever there. As far as the Red Sox, I don't know. I mean, Brandon Workman's been awesome this year, but I would hope they go get somebody by the end of July and kind of solidify this, but my answer is probably nobody.
Okay. I still think Barnes is probably the best guy to own. He's just been struggling lately. What's worrying me a little bit about Barnes, not the runs, you know, his ERA has risen almost 2 runs in his last 4 appearances. That'll happen. But 7 walks in his last 8 appearances. And he had been amazing with his control this year. Last year, he walked like 5 batters per 9 or something crazy, but now Barnes' control is getting a little wild. So I would rank them Barnes, Workman, but it could be Workman and Barnes. Workman has been really, really good this year. Chris, Fangraphs, true or false, is your homepage. You open up a browser, it goes to Fangraphs.
Let me see, because Google Chrome does. No, it's my number 6 page. Baseball Reference is actually 1 spot ahead of Fangraphs on my most opened pages. So,
where's CBS?
Third.
I don't even want to know what 2nd is. I want the audience to just try to guess. I don't know. It might be like a competitor website, and then I don't want to embarrass you.
It's not a competitor website, guys.
Okay.
It's all work stuff. It's all work stuff, everybody.
It's Baseball Savant.
That's actually the one right after Fangraphs.
Okay. So, fun with Fangraphs. Let's take a look at some advanced stats. Let's take a look at the leaders in hard contact rate. And if you want to go to Fangraphs, click on leaders and then batting, and then this will be batted ball data. Joey Gallo is number one. Joey Gallo. I'll let Chris do it if he wants. Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, Paul Goldschmidt, 4. Rendon, 5. Christian Walker, 6. How about Shin-Soo Choo, 7 on this list of hard contact? Will Myers, Franmil Reyes, and Marcelo Zuna. So Goldschmidt, Walker, Choo, Myers, Reyes, Marcelo Zuna. Those are names that might surprise people. What do you make of the hard contact leaders?
Well, one thing that is worth noting, we've talked about it a little bit this season, but hard contact rate across the league continues to rise. It was up to 35% last season. I think it's 37.5% so far this season. So there was a point when a 37.5% hard contact rate was really good. Now it's pretty pedestrian, but even by that standard, all these guys are doing really, really well. And I think it's, you know, someone like Paul Goldschmidt, who's been disappointing this season, I think it makes you feel a little better about his chances moving forward. And I'm not too concerned about him anyway. Will Myers is a surprise. What's that?
You're not concerned about him, about Goldschmidt?
No. No, we did this last year. And he ended up being incredible from June on. So
the fact that he's hitting the ball really hard. It was earlier
than
that, though. I mean, it was like May. It was like one bad month for Goldschmidt last year. Now it's two.
Was it?
I'm almost positive.
I will say the bad months weren't as bad this time. Like, he's almost at an 800 OPS. I don't think he was even that good. Like, yeah, he hit 293 in May.
Which is
surprising. Yeah. He didn't hit for any power, but yeah, he hit 293. Mm. That's pretty surprising. But I think this is a good sign that he's hitting the ball really hard, and we shouldn't have that much concern. I don't think I'm any more concerned about him than I would have been coming into the season. I think he'll still be very good.
All right, that's Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt definitely has league winner potential for you. What else on the most added list? On the hard contact list?
Will Myers is surprising to see there. I've pretty much given up on him as being much more than a number four outfielder moving forward, because he's just striking out way too much. He's hitting a ton of infield fly balls, but when he does square up a ball, it's good things are happening. So that's nice to see. I'm not sure he's better than the third outfielder for the Padres at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't really do it for me. Even last year, I feel like he was doing good things at the beginning of the season, and we know who he is. He's a bad
batting
average.
Give me all of the Franmil Reyes over Will Meyer.
Yeah, Reyes just needs to get a little bit more consistent, but
yeah,
you know I also see his home run to fly ball rate is 35.2%, which is crazy.
Sure, but he only has a 1.9% infield fly ball rate. So you compare that to Will Myers, is at 15%. His 28% home run to fly ball ratio looks a lot less sustainable than what Franmil Reyes is doing, because a lot more Franmil Reyes fly balls are viable.
All right, next category is BABIP hitter BABIP. Okay, so who are the leaders? Who are maybe the luckiest or among the luckiest? David Dahl still has a 434 BABIP. And you know that guys are going to have high BABIPs at Coors Field, but this is insane. 434 BABIP for David Dahl. Austin Meadows and Brandon Lau. I want to say that Brandon Lau is one of the best sell highs in fantasy. But I buy that he's going to be a power hitter. And he's always delivered a better average than he should, going back to the minors. So
yeah, but he never struck out this much in the minors. He was always actually a decent contact hitter in the minors. He's just an all or nothing guy at this point. He kind of looks a little like Ian Happ, actually. Now, that's not to say he's going to go the way of Ian Happ, but he has a 19.7% swing strike rate, and it was 18% last year. So, you know, we're going on over 100 games of him being, you know, a pretty lousy contact hitter. And he didn't have a super high BABIP last year, so it's hard to say that he's just going to be a high BABIP guy moving forward. He might be, but I think you're probably looking at more of a 230 to 240 hitter moving forward, unless he improves the contact.
All right, that's Brandon Lau. Also on the list, Javier Baez, Joey Gallo, Yoan Moncada, Jeff McNeil, Shin-Soo Chu, who is also among the leaders in hard contact rate, Tim Anderson, and Miguel Cabrera. That's your top 10. So Dahl, Meadows, Lau, Baez, Gallo, Moncada, McNeil, Shin-Soo Chu, Tim Anderson, and Miguel Cabrera, your top 10 in BABIP. What does this mean to you?
Guys like Baez, guys like Moncada, they're going to be high BABIP players. They've established that for their careers. I want to say Austin Meadows has been a pretty high BABIP guy as well, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Yeah, he was 336 last season in his 59 games. Look, BABIP takes a really long time to stabilize. It's such a noisy stat. There's so much that goes into it that's outside of a player's control that you know, generally speaking, you need about 1,500 plate appearances before you can really definitively say, okay, we have a pretty good idea of what a batter's true talent level is when it comes to BABIP. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to change. I would guess at least one guy on this list has a sub-300 BABIP in the second half, and it'll probably be Joey Gallo.
All right, then let's do one more Fun with Fangraphs category. Would you like to do pitcher ground ball rate or pitcher home run to fly ball rate?
Home run to fly ball rate, I think, is more interesting.
Okay, fine. The other one's not interesting at all. It was a stupid thing. I'm sorry. It was a stupid waste of time. Home run to fly ball rate. Who's giving up the most home runs per fly ball? You, Darvish, leads the way. 22.4% of his fly balls are leaving the ballpark. Gerrit Cole, Kyle Gibson, Dakota Hudson, Jake Arrieta, Shane Bieber. We talked about that with Heath yesterday. John Gray, Tyler Malley, Carlos Carrasco, and Ivan Nova. I am surprised that Trevor Bauer is not on this list, since he's always, you know, since last time out, he was like, oh, every time we give up a fly ball, it's a home run. But these guys have it worse than you, Trevor Bauer. Darvish, Cole, Gibson, Hudson, Arrieta, Bieber, John Gray, Malley, Carrasco, and Ivan Nova. Takeaways from the home run to fly ball rate leaders.
As with hard contact percentage, this has risen league-wide from 12.7% last season to 14.3% this season. So wow. You do have to take that into account. We're seeing a lot more guys with, you know, in this range, the 20% range than you usually do. And that'll come down. We probably won't see nearly this many. But, you know, it's a lot of guys who it's not terribly surprising to see them in this range. You know, Shane Bieber, someone who has really solid peripherals, but, you know, over the course of what he's done this year and last year, he's been someone who's gotten hit really hard when he has gotten hit. So it's not totally surprising. John Gray, both playing in Coors, and just that lack of consistency that has defined his career. You know, he'll strike three guys out and then give up a home run, and it's kind of hard to say which version of him is coming because there's not a lot of predictability there. So some of this is just bad luck for a lot of these guys. You know, I don't think they'll give up this many home runs, but there are reasons for some of these guys to continue to struggle with that. I would say Gerrit Cole's probably the guy because he's so good at everything else. He's probably the guy who I would expect this to regress most for. He's more than double what he was last season, despite giving up fewer fly balls overall. So, you know, you can't really call Gerrit Cole a buy low, can you?
No,
but
you can't.
There's a run and a half difference between his ERA and his Sierra right now.
Which is higher? His ERA is higher.
His ERA is, 3.72 ERA, Sierra in the, 2.3, 2.4 range.
Yeah, Gerrit Cole is striking everybody out, too. He's been great. Yeah. I mean, if I'm drafting pitchers today, I don't care what Gerrit Cole's ERA is. He's probably my third pitcher. Scherzer. I think I'd go Scherzer, Verlander, Cole. And, yeah, even ahead of Chris Sale, ahead of DeGrom. I think that's what I do. Okay. Thank you for your insight on Fun with Fangraphs, Chris. It's Team Name Tuesday time. More alliteration. Fun with Fangraphs, Team Name Tuesday, right? I mean, all right. Pueyos Hermanos for Cesar Pueyo.
Okay.
That's very good. That's a Breaking Bad reference. Cesar Pueyo, can you talk about his mixed league viability? That was the question associated with Team Name Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I cannot.
I don't know. Right, I mean, okay, he's an Angels outfielder. He's done some good things. I'm going to pull up his player page. Obviously, this isn't really moving the needle much. You don't buy it. But he has...
From what I understand, he's hit fairly well in the minors in recent seasons. 844 career OPS at AAA, but we've seen it the last couple of years where guys like Jose Martinez or guys like Tommy Pham have kind of made this late career breakout after stalling out in the upper minors. But I It seems unlikely.
He's 28.
Maybe there's something else there that I don't know of, because I can't say I've done a deep dive. But my knee jerk reaction is to say that this is probably not anything real.
Yeah, he's 28 years old, so it's unlikely. Okay, pocket full of posy. Pocket full of posy. Yeah. Zach Galifianakis.
That's very good. That's good.
That's going to win today, I think. I want you, so Vlad. It's creepy. Sure. It's creepy. Domo arigato, Mr. Renato.
Okay.
And somebody wanted to give us a Team Name Tuesday just all about Peep. So this is Peep Name Tuesday. Peep Sop Choi, Joe Peepatone, Vicente Peepadilla, Scott Peepsednik, JJ Peeps, and Shane Peeperino. All right. That works for me.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks. That's
wonderful.
Fine.
Let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. By the way, you watched the game last night. It's a good game.
Which game?
The Warriors and the Raptors.
Yes. Yes, I did. That was part of why I went to sleep so late.
Yeah.
These NBA Finals, West Coast games.
That's another reason. It was in Toronto. It wasn't a freaking West Coast game. It's another reason why hockey...
That's on the West Coast.
...is... Hockey is better than basketball. Okay, listen. Basketball is better, but imagine you haven't watched
people.
You haven't watched
people fall. Like, people trip over themselves to praise playoff hockey.
It's
somehow a different product than it is. Like, you either like hockey or you don't.
Well,
don't
it's making me realize
hockey.
I would have liked hockey more if I had watched it, but. Obviously, we're looking at like the best teams, right? Playing great hockey. Like last night was great basketball. Those teams were playing great basketball. But imagine the NBA starting an hour earlier. The NBA Finals starting at 8 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock Eastern, which
would
be wonderful.
That'd be nice.
And with like so many fewer stoppages. Like that, the goaltending thing on Cousins, that took forever. And then what did they reviewed a ridiculous thing in the final minute.
I hate the. I've become an anti-replay zealot in all sports. I think we should just get rid of it all, because it's the entertainment factor should be more important than figuring out whether it was an inch to the right or to the left. Like, these games get bogged down, and it's true of every sport. I think baseball probably comes the closest to doing it right, but we shouldn't have these multi-minute stoppages in key moments. It sucks the energy out of the building.
I'm not quite anti-replay. I'm not quite as anti-replay as you are, but basketball, the stoppages are just unbelievable. Yeah. That's why playoff hockey is better. All right, email time.
Ugh.
This is from no name really on the first email, Adam. Way to go, dear guy, buddy, friend, and dude. Will Whit Merrifield ever get another steal? We talked about that. The second question was, is Gene Segura the worst type of player in fantasy? He isn't hurting you, but he's barely helping you. He isn't hurting you in batting average or runs, but he's barely helping you anywhere else. Four steals. Is Gene Segura the worst type of player in fantasy? Or is it Jose Ramirez? Yeah, it's Jose Ramirez.
No. The worst type of player in fantasy is probably... someone who's really bad at baseball.
No, but the worst type of player that you would actually roster and start is probably a guy like Nick Markakis, who it just feels so replacement level, but at the end of the year, because he plays every day, is going to have decent numbers. But I get it with Segura, because he only has four steals now. He stole one last night, and you know he's usually a 20-steal guy. But... keep in mind, he has led shortstops in batting average three straight years, so he's great there. He scored a ton of runs. It's not just that he's not helping you in runs. He's actually a big bonus in runs and batting average. He'll probably hit higher than 291. But I get it. I think what makes Segura feel kind of ordinary is that shortstops have been so good this year.
Sure. But a guy who hits 290... the steals are the biggest disappointment for me. I was hoping he would still be that 20 stolen base guy. And if he's more like a 10 stolen base guy, things get a lot harder for him to really be a strongly above average starting shortstop. But he still has been, you know, a solid starter. It's not a superstar, but you didn't really have to pay a superstar price for him. It's nice to have some guys in your lineup that you just don't have to worry about.
This email's from Carl L. Who would you rather have rest of season, Plesac or Canning?
Canning. Plesac, I don't think, has the same strikeout potential.
From Sean, should I consider selling high on Ketel Marte, or is this for real?
No, this isn't for real, but the breakout is, to a certain extent, for real. He is legitimately taking a step forward, and we saw flashes of it last season. He was a swing change guy, so I do think that there's definitely something real there, just not, you know, maybe close to a 900 OPS real.
Yeah, he's currently, Ketel Marte is currently the number one second baseman in points, number three in Roto. From Sean, when you do your rankings, what is the cutoff for a must-start player regardless of location or matchup? And then he wants us, well, why don't we do this first? Rank the second baseman for the rest of the season. Brandon Lau, Ozzie Albies, Nick Senzel, and David Bodie.
Albies, Senzel, Lau, Bodie.
All right, now when is the cutoff for must-start player regardless of location or matchup? So that's probably a pitching question, right?
Yeah, I mean, hitter, you got to go probably to the end of the top 12 or top 36 at outfield before you really start to get, just because matchups, they matter certainly, but over the course of the week, it's a lot harder to make that call when you're talking about, you know, seven games potentially against three different teams and seven different starting pitchers. So I do a little bit less juggling of the hitters in my lineup than I do the pitchers. Pitchers, I don't think you can get much past 20 to 25 before you're starting to look at guys that...
I think that's a little short, because I think, like, Scott has Domingo Ramon 35th, Heath has him 33rd. Frankie Montas, Masahiro Tanaka, those guys are in that range. Mike Minor, Brad Peacock, Cole Hamels. I think it's probably like the top 40 you're starting just about every week. Look at the names.
Yeah,
it's hard to get away.
Like
from.
You're not starting all those guys at Coors Field if that's their
the only
matchup,
one.
Right?
That's the only matchup. Coors Field doesn't count in this.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's a little deeper than that, but
like Frankie Montas, you're never sitting. Right now, Mike Soroka, you're never sitting. Mike Minor, you're never sitting.
Sure.
I think it's top 40. All right, grade the trade from Dabs, 16 team points league. Give Alvarez.
I would assume Jordan.
Oh, yeah. I was like, who? Jordan Alvarez. We're pronouncing it Jordan, by the way. Get
Jordan.
Chris Archer.
D?
That trade's only good if Alvarez gets demoted.
Yeah. I mean, in a 16, Chris Archer does have more value in a 16-team league, and I know that goes without saying because every player has more value in a 16-team league, but a player like Chris Archer, who relies so much on volume, has more value in a league with fewer replacement level options. In a 12-team league, you can probably stream something close to what Chris Archer will get you at this point. But in a 16-team league where, you know, potentially 40 more pitchers are rostered, it's a lot harder to replace him. But even then, you're selling it at Alvarez's high point.
Let me cut you off because I want to get to the other emails. But this is great. On the video show, they've actually updated the question with a grade from Chris. And it says Chris, D. It looks like a smiley face, but that's just wonderful. All right, this is from Big Sven.
It's adorable, Adam.
In Lindenhurst. I dropped Erman Marquez for Jordan Alvarez in a 10-team league. Was that a good move?
No. No, you almost certainly have a worse player than Erman Marquez, even in a 10-team league. He was what, 16th in points, 25th in Roto, is what you said.
That's right. Thank you for listening. Good job.
Yeah, you have a worse player even then, and this is what I was talking about earlier. Just because a guy's disappointing doesn't mean he's bad, and in Erman Marquez's case, it's clear that he has not been bad this season. He has been a disappointment.
All right, Chris, we're going to go. We have 4 minutes
bad,
left
bad.
And 5 emails. Okay, this is from Ryan. We always hear about Gallen, Lizardo, McKay, even Reyes. Who has the highest floor and the highest ceiling among pitching prospects this year?
That's a tough one. I would say Reyes still has the highest ceiling among this group. And Gallen seems like a pretty high floor guy. The only thing that gives me pause is we should see him in the Marlins rotation relatively soon. He's not going to get a lot of wins. And so maybe that makes his floor a little lower. But because he's succeeding so well at the high minors, I think he's, you know, not necessarily an ace, but someone who should be able to come in and compete.
All right. We got Jesse in Atlanta. Dear Justin, Danny, Maynard, and Adam. You know what? I think maybe I should save this one for tomorrow, because the question is about which closers are going to get moved and who's going to, like, speculative closers for the trade.
Is that Allison Chains?
I think it might be. No, it's Tool.
No.
I think it's Tool.
Tool. That's okay. That's his name, yeah.
From Lou, rank these outfielders in a 12-team league. D. Gordon, Avi Garcia, Hunter Renfro, Malik Smith, Brian Reynolds, Lorenzo Cain. I don't know the format, just 12 teams. D. Gordon, Avi Garcia, Hunter Renfro, Malik Smith, Brian Reynolds, Lorenzo Cain.
And Kane's number one, and then it gets really tricky. Man, I almost want to put Avi Garcia second. He's showing some really interesting signs so far this season.
I'm cool with that.
I think I'm going with him second, and
I think I'd take
probably D. Gordon third.
Yeah. And Joe in York, Nebraska, who's better rest of season, Austin Riley or Manny Machado? If I were to make a bet with my friend on this matter, what criteria should we use to determine that? And should injury issues lead to the wager dissolving?
I think you probably want to use something like a rate stat, you know, maybe WOBA
No. You just use fantasy production. You do a report in your CBS league, whatever your format is. You do a custom report. You select the dates from this point to this point, and you see who ranks higher. And that is all you have to do, Chris Towers.
Okay.
And who do you think will be better?
I would probably say Machado will be better, but I feel a lot less confident that Machado will be very good than I do that Riley will slow down considerably. So it's that's kind of a tough one.
I think if one player misses five more games than the other due to injury, the bet is off. And the last email we have is from the guy with sole possession of the best record in the podcast league, asking, how are things going in the podcast league? I'm 4-6, but things are looking up. My team, I made a good trade. My team will get better. I'm optimistic.
I think I'm above 500.
Well, then you're in good shape.
I'm trying to pull it up now, but I believe I got off to a slow start in that league, but I think things have been going better for me. Let's pull it up. Podcast Listeners League, the new Bornographers.
6-4-0.
Doing really, really well.
Good for you. All right, so I'm dragging up the rear a little bit. I'm in third to last place, I think. But I'm optimistic. Like I said, made a good trade. Got Mike Soroka a few weeks ago. Got Michael Conforto in the same deal.
Scott's in first place.
Is he really? Oh, Scott kills this league.
No, second place.
Yeah. California Penal is the guy who wrote the email. He's in sole possession of first place. And that's it for Fantasy Baseball today. Thank you for your emails. Really appreciate it. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Chris Towers killing it back from vacation. Tomorrow it'll probably be me and Heath. We'll talk to you then on Fantasy Baseball Today.